Okay, good evening. First of all, I'd like to thank Dan for letting me push him forward a week. He was supposed to do it at the end of the month, but unfortunately this thing turned into a four-session sermon. So he graciously let me take his spot and gave himself a delay there, you know, to get more prepared. So next week he's going to have a fantastic sermon, everything in it, PowerPoint, the whole bit. So come and see that. Be the highlight of your month. Okay, we're looking at the last part of this, the pseudoscience of evolution and the consequences of atheism. We kind of covered all that. We've looked at section one, how even Darwin said pretty much evolution is unreasonable. And we see that a lot of scientists really call upon to be unfaithful to their science in order to accept, you know, some of the precepts of evolution. We've shown how improbable it is by statistical laws, Borel's law. It's unsustainable, and a lot of the experiments they show have really nothing to do with, you know, life in a test tube. And a lot of evolutionists are bailing because they can find, after waking up, you know, they really don't know anything about it. It's unethical because, you know, we showed a lot of the hoaxes that have been perpetuated by certain scientists. And we made up this little word, immutationable, just for the fact that evolution relies on mutation, and just about every, you know, mutation has some sort of negative effect to it. It's not an upward trend in crossing genetic codes. We also showed it was ignoble, that the psychology behind it has gendered, you know, in atheism a cruelty to man, you know, far beyond anything even bad religion has ever done. Atheism in so many forms of socialism, communism, Nazism has perpetrated some of the worst and gigantic, enormous atrocities in the history of the world. On a more positive note, this evening, we're going to look at the true intelligent designer, God. We're going to put him back into the mix, and scientists are going to do this. Not all scientists are corrupt. Not all scientists are evolutionists. There are a growing number of non-corrupt, non-evolutionists who are embracing new evidence that may put God back into the picture, you know, for a lot of people. In the fall of 1973, the world's most eminent astronomers and physicists gathered in Poland to commemorate the 500th birthday of Nicholas Copernicus. At this symposium, Brandon Carter, a well-established astrophysicist and cosmologist, that's not some guy that knows how to do your makeup, cosmos being the world, you know, study of that, from Cambridge University, and fellow graduate student of Stephen W. Hawking, one of the top smart guys out there, presented a paper entitled "Large Number of Coincidences and the Anthropic Principle in Cosmology." It introduced the anthropic principle, which spells out nothing less than the philosophical overthrow of the Copernican Revolution. The anthropic principle, from the Greek word anthropos, man, simply stated says, all the seemingly arbitrary and unrelated constants in physics have one strange thing in common. These are precisely the values you need if you want to have a universe capable of producing life. Even more, in other words, all the myriad laws of physics were fine-tuned from the very beginning of the universe for the creation of man. That the universe we inhabit appeared to be expressly designed for the emergence of human beings. That is, as look at all the various things that tie together, and subatomic particles to other forces, it's not like, you know, as evolution, you know, as kind of a chaos, and it's trying to kind of work things out, and if one thing doesn't work, something else, you know, develops. But it's all got to work with the same basic structure. Foundational science. What he was proposing is that as you look at this foundational science, it's something that had to be there from the very beginning in order for, through all these permutations, for man to be the final analysis. That is, the universe had to have in mind that at the very outset, or the very finished product of evolution, man from the very beginning. Which argues for, not again, a random chaos that just let things go, but a very fine-tuned, definite design, factor that argues for a designer, intelligent designer, from the very beginning. And only one being fits that, and that's God. And we'll look at some of these, you're getting the variations. Rather than living in a random universe, this new scientific perspective of the worlds and stars states that the universe has to know in advance what it's going to be before it knows how to start itself. Okay, Fred Hoyle, astronomer, that's his thing, so we're introducing two, three individuals here. So a lot of scientists are starting to adopt this perspective. Even minor tinkering with the fundamental forces of physics, gravity, electromagnetism, the nuclear strong force or the nuclear weak force, would result in an unrecognizable universe. That is, if any of these things were off just a little bit, our universe would not even be anywhere near what we're familiar with. These are some of the examples from John Leslie's book, Universes. Takes gravity is roughly 10 to the 39th times weaker than electromagnetism. Okay? If gravity had been 10 to the 33 times weaker than electromagnetism, stars would be a billion times less massive and would burn a million times faster. So even a slight variation in gravity would pretty much, stars would have winked out a long time ago. The nuclear weak force is 10 to the 28th times the strength of gravity. Had the weak force been slightly weaker, all the hydrogen in the universe would have been turned to helium, making water impossible. You know, water is a basic thing that we need for all this, life stuff to keep going. The stronger nuclear strong force, if you don't know what these things are, chemistry has kind of evolved, physics has evolved. when I was young, about the only thing you had to know was the atom had a nucleus, proton, neutron with a bunch of electrons around it. Then they started smashing them in nuclear accelerators and came up with subatomic particles, little things they couldn't even see, but you could see their traces in cloud chambers. That is, you get a cloud, chamber with cloud in it, and you could see like a little contrail going. You couldn't see the particle itself, but you could see the trail it left. Okay, and then they started breaking that down into thing. What holds these things together? So you get a strong force, a weak force, all these other little things, that kind of, they suspect. Although, I remember when they built the world's largest atom smasher, and the director was William Fermi, and when they started smashing all this stuff, they asked him, well, have you solved any of the mysteries of the universe yet? And he goes, no, we just got more questions now. So the smaller they get, they're not discovering anything that's fixing anything. All they can do is observe what's there. And this is what the guy's reporting on. The stronger nuclear strong force by as little a stronger nuclear strong force by as little as 2% would have prevented the formation of protons, okay? Yielding a universe without atoms. They try to form something in that. Okay, decreasing it by 5% would have given us a universe without stars. So we're working within very small tolerances for a lot of this stuff. If the difference in mass between a proton and a neutron were not exactly as it is, roughly twice the mass of an electron, then all neutrons would have become protons or vice versa. That would be an end to chemistry and life itself. The very nature of water, so vital to life, is something of a mystery. It's very unique in its properties. Unique among molecules, water is lighter in its solid state than in its liquid state. Okay. Ice floats. If it did not, the oceans would freeze from the bottom up and the earth would now be covered with solid ice. And this property is traced to hydrogen. And the synthesis of carbon, we are carbon-based creatures, the synthesis of carbon, the vital core of all organic molecules, involves an astonishing coincidence in the ratio of the strong force and electromagnetism. This ratio makes it possible for carbon-12 to reach an excited state of exactly 7.65. You know, I have no idea what the M stands for. Okay, the rest is what?
Mega electron volts.
Okay. I knew there's so many M's and so many different things, but electron volts, I figured that one out. You sure it's mega, not million? Because it could. Okay, all right. So, big number, all right. So, because we're dealing with the temperature typical of the center of stars, okay, which creates a resonance inside involving helium-4, beryllium-8, carbon-12, allowing the necessary binding to take place during a tiny window of opportunity. Okay? All this is able to do in a 10 to the minus 17th seconds. I mean, this universe is finely tuned. All the previous proclamations that the universe had to be pre-planned to be as unique as it is puts a superior intelligence and God back in the picture decisively and melds science and an intelligent designer back together. Early men of science actually believed in God, Galileo, Copernicus, whatever, and thus they looked to an ordered universe, not a chaos that you couldn't depend on, but something that was reproducible, something that was dependable, whatever, that displayed his design. The belief of order in the universe was the beginning of science. You know, and you can see when you start taking God out of it, it kind of devolves into evolution. Okay, so the only answers that some scientists have been able to offer in contradiction to the anthropic principle have no basis in fact, but are pure speculation. These are theories of parallel universes, baby universes, bubble universes, things you'll find on Star Trek and some of the other, Stargate, which can only be classified as science fiction. There's no evidence whatsoever for it. And we're left with Romans 1:20. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made so that they are without excuse. Really, the more that scientists look at the world around us, its order, its design, its fine tolerances, everything else, they should be going, there has to be a God. And a lot of scientists are. They're changing their mind. There has to be an intelligent designer. Has to be. Because the world just is not as sloppy as they promote it to be. Some parting notes. Boy, you can get home early to catch the Oscars tonight. Men did not accept the work of Charles Darwin because, it was so superior to God's word and its intelligence and its logical. God is going, come on, let's be reasonable. Let's be logical. Let's look at the facts. God is not afraid to do that. More and more scientists are. In fact, they're going into discussion. They don't want an open forum or debate anymore, because they're starting to lose. Rather, they embrace Darwinism, or evolution, as the first alternative to the God they wanted to deny. We talked about that. What was the will? Or what was the wish? They wished for something other than God. They didn't want to be held accountable to him. And so the first thing that came along that had any kind of feasibility to it, or any kind of logic or rationale, they accepted it. Most of Darwin's work is hyped out of proportion. We'll look at a little bit at Darwin here in a moment, but mostly it was others that took his Origin of the Species, whatever, like Huxley, and really pushed it. Really pushed it. Notice in the comments of some of the following devotees, next to the Bible, no work has been quite as influential in virtually every aspect of human thought as The Origin of the Species, Ashley Montague. Or, Darwin was one of history's towering geniuses and ranks with the greatest heroes of man's intellectual progress. They really should have talked to Darwin about this first. To add to the image of the venerable sage, older pictures of Darwin are usually shown of him, although he did not produce much in later life. He had a little cottage and he kind of retired to it. He probably made enough off his book in order to do that. In fact, the statues of him, you know, sitting almost like Lincoln, you know, like an ancient sage, you know, to come to. What they try to draw you away from, in truth, according to Darwin's own autobiography, a genius he wasn't. I mean, this is what he says of himself. During the 3 years which I spent at Cambridge, my time was wasted. As far as the academical studies were concerned, as completely as at Edinburgh and at school, I attempted mathematics and even went during the summer of 1828 with a private tutor, a very dull man, to Barmouth, but I got on very slowly. Actually, he had other interests on the outside. He liked to hunt, probably a good shot and stuff like that. That's where he was really only 22 years old when he signed up for the 5-year voyage of the Beagle, when he sailed to the Galapagos, and was around 30 when he finally got around to publishing Origin of Species. Even this picture is of him older than when he did that. Okay. So when was the last time you read a thesis paper of a 23, 25-year-old? Yeah. Would you stake the whole history of the world on it? Yeah. Actually, the book does not really conclusively provide evidence for evolution. We kind of already saw that. Yeah. As far as he's concerned, hardly any of it, you know, proved out to be fact, and he would have rewritten it if he had a chance. We might suggest rather a study of the history of biological theories by Radel, which holds on a lot of things even before Darwin. I mean, the theory was already there and brewing. He just kind of copied down or absorbed a lot of it as he wrote it. And according to G.A. Kirkut, most science students who think that Darwin proved evolution have read the title of his book only. Okay. And we'll leave it at that. So just to get you to kind of rethink things, your world depends on your perspective. I mean, one of the reasons we got into this is that you have only two choices. I mean, at some point in your life, you have to ask yourself, where did I come from? I mean, trace your history back. Do you really feel that, you know, your ancestors are something that swung from trees farther back, that swam in the ocean farther back, then, you know, just kind of eked out of the mud? Do you really feel that inside of yourself? Or do you feel yourself special on this planet? And that there's something in you that makes you special. Some anthropologists, you know, describe man as a worshiping animal. He looks to something greater than himself in order to get by, especially in times of crisis, a need for it. And just in every culture, you find them worshiping something. Okay? Even evolution, it is a religion. It does worship. They may put it in different ways. You know, a lot of naturalists talk about, you know, Mother Nature. You know, nature itself produced this as if it's a god. And in mythology, yeah, nature was a god. You know, a lot of it really harks back to old paganism. What the call of Christianity is to a higher calling. That's the way Paul puts it. It lets you know that you came from something superior. This is why we've been reading Genesis, where God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Your father is not a mud hole. He's the supreme architect of the universe. And he expects us to act that way. And it does depend on the way you act. The society around us now is becoming horrendous in the things it's perpetrating, all because it's drawn away from God. Okay. America used to be a lot better, even as much as 50 years ago. It's like, you know, every time we have a world war, we have a tendency to drift back to God and get rid of the silliness of their sins. But again, you're up to a crossroads. Yeah, how are you going to live your life? Through the debaucheries. Paul puts it, you know, in Romans 6, you're going to be slave to something in this world. The interesting thing is, you get to choose. Are you going to be a slave to the more baser things that will drag you down and destroy all sense of humanity and the divine in you? Or will you turn yourself over to be a slave of God? with all the blessings that go with it. A lot of times as young people, we rebel against authority. We don't want people telling us what to do. But we'll let the littlest things, the meanest things, the baser things addict us and decide the whole course of our lives. I guess I've used this illustration before. I remember, yeah, when I was working down in Palm Desert, we're building multi-million dollar homes. And a lot of them, you know, the people were gone a lot, you know, the rich people. But they had servants' quarters, and the servants would stay and, you know, do everything. You might think, well, I never want to be a servant. I tell you, those people lived a lot better than I did. I mean, they're living in a rich man's house. You know, all the TVs, everything they can watch when they want to. They get to eat out of his larder. You know, better food than I ever had. You know, they get to swim in these fancy swimming pools, you know, designed, decorated, whatever. They make enough money so their kids can go off to college, whatever. It's not a bad life if you got the right master. And if God is your master, you've got the best life possible. We're about to sing "The Way of the Cross Leads Home." In the garden, man decided to take a different path. And it's been a disaster every step of the way. There really is only one path, and it's the path that God is trying to guide us through. To show us the way through all the history. He had to start again with individuals that kind of came close to what he wanted, spiritual men, you know, as opposed to millions and billions that were going in a different direction. And out of them, he developed a nation, one out of many, in order to bring them along, to bring them to Christ. All of history, God has been working with mankind to bring him to the cross, to Christ. To a different image, a better image, again, a higher calling, to bring us back home to paradise, to back to an obedience to him that gives us everything we really need for our well-being, security, blessings, love, attention, everything. So we stand and say, you know, think about it, where is your life headed? Are you being? You know, are you following the shadow that Christ left for us, the way, the path, you know, the light to go to, or have you, like so many others, wandered off in a different direction? Think about it seriously. Now, each day is a second chance, third chance, a fourth chance. You need to look into it. Seriously, the next day. You know, before, there is no next day. You might say this, yeah, did you see Groundhog Day? Yeah. Some of these films you can only see once, because Groundhog Day had a guy who was an absolute jerk. And he woke up every day to the same day. And he was going to relive this day over and over again until he got it right. And that seems to be what God's doing for us. He gives us all these days, hopefully, so that one day we'll wake up and get it right. And that's what we should be looking, instead of just going our own way and messing up every day as it comes, to make every day a right day, filling it with a good relationship with our God and with our fellow Christians. And if there's anything we can do to help, please let us know as we stand to sing.